Hello, everyone. My name is Carl, and I'll be chairing this first oral presentation session with Michelle. And so our first presenter is Jérôme Fortin. And so, Jérôme.
Exactly. All right, good morning. So we're going to be staying above the shoulders for a little bit longer. All right, so our lab studies the mammalian, hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, which controls reproductive function. And my particular focus of interest is at the level of the pituitary gland. The pituitary contains a subpopulation of specialized cells that are called gonadotropes. We just heard about them. And they synthesize and they secrete the gonadotropins, so luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone. And those hormones are important to regulate gonad function. The synthesis of the gonadotropins is regulated by several factors. One of them, we just heard a lot about it, is a gonadotropin-releasing hormone that comes from the brain. Another ones are activins, which are produced by the pituitary gland, and they act in an autocrine-paracrine manner to selectively stimulate the synthesis of FSH. And the activity of activins is antagonized by inhibins, which come from the gonads. So activins stimulate FSH synthesis, and they do this by turning on a signaling cascade in gonadotrope cells that culminate in the activation of FSH beta subunit gene transcription. And the way that activins do this has been extensively studied using model cell lines, so essentially in vitro studies. And the consensus is that you have activins that are binding to heteromeric assemblies of type 1 and type 2 receptors, and this leads to the phosphorylation of effector proteins that are called SMAD2 and SMAD3. Now, these SMAD2 and SMAD3 interact with SMAD4 when they're phosphorylated, and the complex accumulates in the nucleus. It binds to the FSH beta promoter, and it turns on FSH beta transcription by cooperating with other factors like FOXL2. So my first goal was essentially to validate this model in vivo by using cell-specific conditional gene deletion in mice. And the first question I ask is, what happens if I take a mouse and I remove SMAD2 and SMAD3 from the gonadotrope of this animal? And perhaps surprisingly, I found that the full-length form of SMAD2 and SMAD3 were not required for normal FSH-beta expression and FSH synthesis in vivo. And this sort of put a question mark on this canonical model of activin regulation of FSH-beta transcription. Now, there are alternative possibilities to this model. So, for example, activins can signal sometimes through non-canonical receptor-regulated SMAD proteins, SMAD 1, 5, and 8, which themselves are downstream of BMP signals, which are also known to be able to turn on FSH synthesis in gonadotropes. Yet another possibility would be that you have FSH synthesis in gonadotropes depends on signals that are transduced by kinases downstream of activin signaling, or simply by signals that are conveyed by other ligands. So I reasoned that by removing SMAD4, I would be able to block simultaneously all the SMAD-dependent signaling, and this should provide a definitive test of whether SMAD proteins are required for FSH beta transcription, FSH synthesis, and fertility in vivo. So in order to do this, I used mice that carry conditional alleles of SMAD4. So those are mice in which part of the SMAD4 gene can be deleted by the action of Cre recombinase. And I crossed those mice with mice that express Cre only in gonadotropes. to make those MAT1 knockout mice, and the control mice in those experiments don't have a Cre allele, so they have an intact MAT4 gene. Interestingly, the male conditional knockouts are display signs of hypogonadism, so they have smaller testes than control littermates, and accordingly, they have a lower sperm count as well. The female SMAD4 knockout mice are subfertile, so you can see that they produce a lower number of pups over a period of 6 months of breeding trials compared with control. And this is because the litters that they give birth to are smaller. So they produce a lower number of pups per litter than control mice. And accordingly, with this subfertility, they have abnormalities in their ovaries. So in mice, after ovulation, there's the formation of this structure called the corpus luteum. And you can see that there are many fewer of them in this MAD4 conditional knockout mice. This is quantified here. And accordingly, the ovaries are also lighter, so they're smaller than in the SMAD4 knockout mice than in the controls. So I wanted to further investigate the process of folliculogenesis in those animals. And what I found is that the early phase of follicle growth, the phases that don't depend on gonadotropins, seem intact. So there's a similar number of follicles at this stage in the knockout mice compared with the controls. However, later stages of maturation, so the stages that depend on gonadotropins, especially FSH, for their growth, are impaired. So there are lower number of follicles at those stages. And so these observations, together with what I've shown you in the previous slide, were broadly consistent with FSH deficiency. This is what you'd expect if there's FSH deficiency. But it was still important to verify whether there was an intrinsic ovarian defect in those mice. And so in order to look at this, I looked at the ability of juvenile females to respond to exogenous gonadotropins, which should stimulate folliculogenesis and drive ovulation if there's no intrinsic ovarian defect. And indeed, I found that the ovaries of those mice and the SMAD4 knockout mice were at comparable responsiveness to this exogenous gonadotropin regimen than seen in the control mice, so they ovulated a comparable number of oocytes. So this, again, was consistent, would be consistent with the defect being at the level of the pituitary gland and gonadotropin deficiency. And indeed, when I look at circulating FSH levels, you can see that in males, they're profoundly reduced in this MAD4 knockout mice compared with the control mice. And accordingly, pituitary FSH beta transcript levels are lower in this MAD4 knockout mice compared with the controls. Similarly, in the females, there's a significant reduction in circulating FSH, and there's also a reduction in pituitary FSH beta transcripts. This, in panel D, this was measured in the early morning of estrus at the time of the activin-dependent FSH surge. So I was also interested in looking whether there were additional molecular abnormalities in the gonadotropes, in the pituitary of the SMAD4 conditional knockout mice. And I found that in addition to a reduction in expression of FSH-beta, there was also a reduction in the level of transcript that code for the alpha subunit of LH and FSH. And there was an upregulation of transcript coding for the gonadotropin-releasing hormone receptor gene. Some important players that are involved in modulating or transducing the activin signal in gonadotropes were not changed. So what these data suggest is that in addition to FSH beta deficiency, there might be other anomalies in the gonadotrope of the SMAD4 knockout mice which contribute to the phenotype that was observed. And finally, I was obviously interested in looking at whether the ability of activin to turn on FSH beta transcription is impaired in the knockout mice. And so in order to look at this, I prepared primary pituitary cultures from mice, from control mice or mice that lack SMAD4 only in gonadotropes. And then I looked at the ability of activin to upregulate FSH beta expression in those cultures. And what I saw in both males and females, in culture prepared from male and female mice, there was a profound reduction in basal FSH beta transcript levels We know that this basal FSH beta expression depends heavily on autocrine, paracrine, activin or activin-like signaling in those cultures. And when I provided exogenous activin, I could still turn on FSH beta expression, but nowhere near the same extent as, same magnitude as in control mice, or control cultures. So this suggests that there is some activin responsiveness that's retained in the SMAD4 knockout mice, but clearly that's not sufficient to drive normal FSH beta expression and sufficient FSH synthesis. So overall, my results show that SMAD signaling is required for proper FSH beta expression and FSH synthesis in vivo, and this is required for fertility. And I would like to end by acknowledging investigators that provided the mouse lines using this study, my mentor Dan, the Bernard Lab member, and CIHR for funding. Thank you so much.
Brock Huskerson. I have a question. Yeah. I don't know if I missed it. They're the same age animals, right, with the males and females. Did you mention the age of the animals?
No, so all the measurements you've seen in adult mice were made with 10-week-old mice. In females, depending on, sometime it was in diestrous metastasis. So they were the stage of estrous cycle was coordinated depending on the experiment. But they were 10 weeks old adults. Yeah.
Did you have any tests after the 6 months of mating?
Did I look at them after 6 months of mating? Yeah, I also looked at them. I didn't show the data. If anything, the phenotype is even more striking at that point. At least the ovarian, like the size of the ovaries relative to the controls, it's even smaller.
Thanks.
Hugh Clark, you mentioned that the point of doing the SMAD4 knockout was to remove all SMAD signaling.
Yeah.
And you saw a response to activin in your cultured cells. So what do you think is the basis of that response?
Right.
Is there a way to test that?
Yeah, that's obviously interesting. One possibility is that those receptor-regulated SMAD proteins, we know they can somewhat go in the nucleus without necessarily having SMAD4. They won't necessarily accumulate there, but they can go in there. So if they're activated by a signal, maybe that can favor their interaction with FOXL2. And in this way, you might get sort of formation of a complex that could drive some FSH beta transcription. That's possibility number one. And possibility number two is obviously that you get a kinase-dependent signal or something like that.
Very quick second question. Have you or somebody else, or maybe mentioned, done a FOXL2 knockout in the gonadotropes, and what does that do?
It's essentially, the phenotype is essentially indistinguishable to what I've seen in the SMAD4 knockouts.
Bernard, have you considered this as a possible model for premature aging? What happens as both your males and your females get older?
So I haven't looked at that thoroughly. I can tell you, for example, like 6 months of breeding trial, it's a pretty long period, I guess, for mice. I don't see, in fact, any evidence of a decline in fertility in the knockouts. So they still keep on producing those like 4 or 5 pups litters throughout the whole duration. So I don't have any evidence that there's really some kind of premature ovarian failure or something like that.
But ovarian failure occurs between 12 and 15 months.
So I haven't looked that far.
Just to go back to the SMADs, I was wondering, what's the difference between, what's lacking in the shorter versions of your SMAD2-3?
Oh, you mean in the SMAD2, why? So the SMAD2-3, that's a complicated model. There was part of SMAD3 that was retained in those mice, a truncated part of a truncated protein that was retained there. So that's why it's kind of unclear. At this point, I can't rule in or rule out a role for SMAD3. I know it doesn't have to bind the DNA because that truncated protein didn't have the DNA binding domain, but that's why it's a complicated model.
But does it interact with SMAD4 like properly, and does it localize to the nuclear when activated?
I presume it's functional, so presumably it does, but I don't know about the physical interaction.